Welcome to Frankly Speaking. The death of someone you love. Everyone has to face it at some time or other, but how we deal with our grief can have a great effect on our lives. I'm Michelle S.A. Montgomery for George Mason University, the State University in Northern Virginia. With me today to discuss growing with grief is Helen Fitzgerald, coordinator of the Grief Crisis Program at the Mount Vernon Center for Community Mental Health. Welcome to Frankly Speaking, Helen. Is grief the same as sadness?
Grief is a reaction or a process that people go through after a loss of some kind. It's usually connected with death, but we're finding more and more often that grief occurs when there has been a divorce, when a mother has given birth to a child. Have you heard of postpartum depression? That's part of grief. When someone moves, when someone's children leave for college, a grief process will be felt. You know, the degree or the intensity will depend upon, of course, the situation.
Now that's very interesting because people normally associate grief only with death. Why is giving birth a grieving process?
I think it's because the mother has had the fetus in her womb. And when the fetus is born, it's a loss for the mother.
What is it? What kind of feeling is it? Is it one kind of feeling, or is it more than one kind?
Grief is very complicated. There is a process, and I could pretty much go over the entire process with you. And people listening to our radio show could say, oh yes, I have felt that way. And yet grief is very individual and very unique. People will cope with their grief pretty much the way they've coped with other things. When I'm working with a family who are dealing with grief because of the death of someone, I will talk to that family about how they've handled other big things in their life, a move, for instance, or when children went to college. Did they handle that with a lot of denial? Did they handle that with a lot of anger? Could they accept it rather readily? And that'll give me a clue on how they're going to handle the grief when a death occurs.
You mentioned symptoms such as denial and anger. What are some other symptoms of grief?
Grief is divided up into three parts, the first one being shock, the second part of grief being suffering, and the third part of grief being recovery. Shock occurs immediately when you've heard some very strong news, whether that someone has died or if you've won $100,000, you'd probably be in a state of shock for a while. At this time, you're very numb. You feel like you're living in a dreamlike state. You may have a hard time remembering to eat and just take care of yourself. You may feel as if things are unreal. You find yourself moving like a robot. You can't make decisions. You need to be taken care of. And this is when families come right away and somebody and food starts coming in. This family really is almost non-functional. Then as the suffering starts, that's when the reality of what has happened begins to sink in.
Now when you say suffering,
with
what
the suffering,
you just mentioned sounds as though one would suffer. How is suffering? How is the second phase?
Well, with suffering comes a multitude of feelings. One might be anger, maybe anger at the physicians or at the hospital. If you've been to a funeral, many times there's a lot of quarreling at the time that the estate is being divided. That's a lot of anger that's being put probably on the wrong place. People might feel guilty. They get into, if only I had said I loved you, if only I had taken him to the doctor sooner. There is a lot of guilt. Sometimes people find themselves being angry with God and then they feel guilty for that. Sometimes they're physically and emotionally drained and resent going to the hospital to see somebody who's ill and somebody who's dying. They feel guilty for that. Sometimes they're angry at the person that has died for leaving them with children to raise and income tax to do. They feel guilty for that. And guilt is very powerful. You can be guilty about one thing and it can ruin your entire day. And a lot of times when I'm working with families, we'll write things down everything that they feel guilty about. Look at that list. Some things we can do something about, some things we're going to have to accept. But it seems like writing it down on a sheet of paper does put it in a perspective, something that you can understand and handle. Other parts of this suffering might be depression. And if the depression is real severe, they might need some medical help. They might even need some counseling to help them with that. The danger about depression is that as it begins to lift, sometimes people who are grieving may feel suicidal. It could be a very passive suicide wish, or it could be a very active suicide wish. Some people just wish they wouldn't wake up in the morning. Others really are beginning to make some plans. And again, I tell people that this can be part of grief, to hang in there. Things will get better, and they will get better. There's a lot of physical symptoms during this period of suffering. Rashes may develop, tightness in the throat, clamminess. You may find your heart racing. And I really suggest for people to get a physical at this time. If you've ever looked at the stress scales, you'll notice that the death in a family is 100 points. That's a lot. And we do know that stress can cause things like ulcers, and some rheumatoid arthritis now is being blamed on stress. Suffering takes a long time, and as things begin to get better and you begin your recovery, there will be periods where you can actually laugh and feel good again. Sometimes just feeling good about something throws people back into guilt for a little while. How can they feel good about something when someone has just died? People begin to make plans of what they're going to do next. Is a sign to me that they're beginning to recover. Maybe they're thinking about going back to school, or maybe they're thinking about taking a trip somewhere, but beginning to look ahead and beginning to plan a life alone without that person. Grief takes a long time. It takes at least a year, and again, people will tell me sometimes the second year is harder than the first, but I think you at least have to go through all of those major anniversaries, holidays, and finally, the anniversary of 1 year of the death of that person.
Do men grieve differently from women?
I think you're talking about men who have been raised as little boys don't cry or big boys don't cry, and so they have kind of a trip laid on them by society. I think we're beginning to see men grieve more openly. Crying is good, and I'm seeing more and more men cry. Everybody grieves differently.
What about women, particularly when a child has been lost in the family?
I think the woman's grief there might be more intense because of having had that child in her womb for so long. The death of a child is one of the most difficult griefs to get over, probably the more difficult death to work through would be a death by suicide. But with the death of a child, that's a reversal of nature. Kids aren't supposed to die first. They're supposed to grow up and grow old and bury us. The feelings of helplessness are so intensified with the death of a child. Parents are used to, you know, kissing the owies away and making things okay again. And all at once they have a child that's saying, you know, I hurt, help me, and you can't do anything. So the death of a child is going to take a long time, if ever, to get over it. My husband's child died, I think, 12 years ago, and he's still grieving for that child. With the death of suicide, by suicide, there is so much more guilt, and everybody who knew that person feels guilty for some reason or another. There's a lot of anger at the person that has killed themselves. There's a lot of searching, looking for answers, and that will take a long time. And I think it's good that people talk to the police and find out as many facts as they can so they can begin to put it together as much as they can and then begin to put it behind them. Also, there hasn't been a chance to say goodbye. There's a lot of unfinished business.
How can we deal with grief?
Well, I find that we've kind of been living in a death-denying society where no one has really wanted to talk about death. So when it occurs, it's a very awkward, uncomfortable thing for family and friends. you don't know what to say, you don't know what to do, and it's so easy. You know, all you have to do is let people talk, let them cry, and if they cry, give them a Kleenex, but allow them to cry. If you're comfortable, touch them, put your arm around them, let them be a child again as you hold this big adult in your arms. But hear them, and they need to talk. That's the way it becomes real for them, is going over the details again and again and again. Give them time to grieve. It takes a long time. It's important that you come, but set up a schedule that you can keep, something that's realistic with what you have. And it might mean a phone call once a week or once every other week. And maybe it's just for a few minutes, and say, I've got a few minutes. I was just thinking of you. How are you? That's wonderful.
Now, would the same approach work for children? How do we encourage children to grieve?
I think our tendency is to protect, and our tendency is to shield them and not take them to funerals, not take them to hospitals, thinking that they may not even be aware that something has happened. That's wrong. Children know when something's going on, and you tell them. You tell them what's going on in very simple terms. Answer their questions. Don't over-answer. They'll hear what you've said. They'll go out and they'll play and they'll process it. And then they'll come back and they'll ask some more questions. Let them know that you may be crying because you're sad. Let them know what they can do for you when you're crying, that maybe you need a hug at that time. Take them to the funeral. Find out. Give them some input into the funeral. What kinds of flowers would they like to take? Do they want to draw something that they can put in the coffin with the person that's died? That's their way of saying goodbye. Take them to the cemetery. I don't ever force a child to do anything they don't want to do. And I will always ask them, do you want to go? If they don't want to go, I will support them in that. But I'll make it very safe for them. We may take a dry run to the funeral home, for instance. Let's just drive by the building before we have to go into it. I tell them about what will be in it. If it's a very young child, you can't expect them to tolerate a two-hour funeral service. Maybe they'd like their own special little service at another time, but keep them involved. This is a time that parents can really develop a trust relationship with their children. If you can be honest with your child about something as big as somebody's dying, they'll know that they can come to you with other problems. Drugs and, you know, that forbidden word, sex, all of those things. So be honest with them.
Thank you, Helen. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University. Production coordinator, Pat Ping. For information about our guest or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. I'm Michelle LaSaint Montgomery at George Mason University, the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.